photograph on it. Well, that must have been when you were a really active cosmonaut.
Yes, that's right.
A Romanian cosmonaut. That's incredible. So, now you set up the UN Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space.
No, I didn't set up. I'm representing Romania and the Association of Space Explorers at this committee.
Uh-huh.
It was set up in 1957. By many member states of the UN.
Oh, you were just a little boy.
I'm just working on behalf of my country and on behalf of the Astronauts Association for this committee. And I was the chairman of the committee twice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay.
What does this committee do? Because it sounds very interesting. It sounds important.
Yeah, actually, this committee is the only professional specialized committee of the UN dealing with the peaceful uses of outer space. Peaceful uses what means? By instance, using space for finding resources in different countries. Using space for remote sensing and sending all this information to developing countries that don't have the possibility otherwise to use space images for their own development. Using the geostationary orbits, the geostationary orbit, it's a limited resource. It's only above the equator at a height of about 36,000 kilometers. And it's very crowded. Using space.
So much noise. There's dogs barking. There are.
Yeah. They are around.
Is that
dogs.
Happening around you? Is that where it is?
I don't.
Because there's no dogs.
A silent place somewhere because it's a lot of people.
Emily, is it your house?
It's not my house, no.
No, how is the record?
I hear all conversation.
Wait. I try to move.
Oh. It is where you are. Okay.
Well, I'm wireless, so I try to.
Okay, great.
So, okay. So can I find a more silent place, please? I have people by Skype.
Do you want to hear
barks of dogs?
You want to go into
some, maybe somewhere.
How about the top of the treehouse? Will that be quiet for you?
You ran the kids away?
Just a little bark the dogs and listen to the engines of the cars. So, just wail a little bit.
It was just getting in the way of us hearing you.
No. Oh, okay, no. So I'm with the owner of the farm.
Ah,
who are we speaking with?
Some very nice and important ladies from LA.
Very nice. Yeah. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Show them where we're going. We're going up to the treehouse. There's a table up on the treehouse.
That sounds wonderful. Up
and
to
this
the
dog,
treehouse.
It does anything?
Up to the tree?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. I'll go to the treehouse.
Okay. Okay.
So we just arrived last night, and I don't know exactly
what,
where, how everything works.
Now, you're here to see the eclipse.
Yes, right.
Because we are lucky in the U.S. we finally get to see one.
That's right.
Yes.
For so many years.
Yes. Now, tomorrow morning, I'm leaving LA at 7:30, which would be 8:30 your time.
I see.
I'm flying up to Montana, but I decided to fly via Minneapolis. Do you think I might get an opportunity to see the eclipse on that flight?
It depends at what time you'll be on the road.
In the sky, you mean?
Yeah,
I'll be in the sky. I'll be in the sky from 7:30, 8:30 your time, till 1 o'clock, 1 p.m.
To 1 p.m. At 1 p.m., one and a few minutes will be the maximum of the eclipse.
Oh, okay.
According to my time, I don't know exactly there.
Yes. Actually, it'll be...
But anyone, even from the airplane, you may see the eclipse. I mean, you may see the sky time.
Yes, that's what I'm hoping. I'm on the left hand side of the plane, so I should. I hope I picked the right seat.
I see.
Anyhow, you, I think, have a perfect viewpoint from where you are. That's wonderful.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. This is the reason we choose this point, yes.
Yes. You know, they say that eclipses bring big changes in the world. You know, an eclipse somehow has a major impact on our lives.
Do you think so?
Yeah, do you think so? I'm asking you. I said, that's what they say. That's what I've heard.
I don't know. It depends from what point of view I look at the eclipse. From the emotional point of view or from the scientific point of view?
Well, from an emotional point of view first.
Yeah, from the emotional point of view, of course, it's a change in your views towards the universe because you are used to have day during the daytime, night during the nighttime, and instantly for a few minutes you have dark, you have night in the middle of the day. So as a scientist, I don't feel a big difference, but most of the people, they just react emotionally to this phenomenon.
Yes.
Some of them, they are scared. Some of them, they are thinking of different fairy tales, stories. They were different interpretations of the eclipse. So in the Middle Age or even before.
Yes.
So, but I'm here. I'm here to follow the eclipse from the scientific point of view and to make interviews from the Romanian television.
Ah, that's wonderful. Very good.
Yeah, we're a full crew here. I'm not alone. We are 7 people from Romania.
Yes.
2 of them from the Romanian television, 2 from the science and technical journal in Romania. And one is building telescopes, has a small shop. It's very appreciated anywhere in the world, sells telescopes anywhere in the world. Me, that's a cosmonaut. Oh, we have also a very well-known in Romania journalist, science journalist. It's 75 years old. He's very experienced.
Wow.
She knows me from the childhood.
Yes. When you were in the Air Force, the Romanian Air Force.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What did you train on? I'm a pilot as well. I trained on a steerman.
So I heard that you are a pilot. Yes, I read about it.
You did?
Actually, I'm an aerospace engineer. I was not a professional pilot, but I flew for my training for the outer space. And then after I came back home, I continued to fly for different professional reasons.
Yes.
Being involved and being considered the flying staff, I had some professional advantages.
Yes.
And I preferred to do it as well till 1998 when I moved to the space agency, to the Romanian Space Agency.
Uh-huh.
The Romanian Space Agency belongs to another minister, not to the Minister of Defense, belongs to the Minister of Science and Technology.
Oh, very interesting.
I've got the approval of the Minister of Defense to work on the civilian position, even being a military person.
Mm-hmm.
And I retired from the Air Force in 2006 as a general.
Yeah, general.
And now I'm working as a civilian one, on a civilian position, even if I'm a retired general.
Oh, you are. But are you still on the UN Committee for the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space?
Yeah, I'm representing Romania and the Association of Space Explorers within this committee.
Uh-huh.
So the committee, the members of the committee are the member states of the UN. All member states of the UN number now 193 countries.
Mm-hmm.
The states are interested in different committees of the UN. Now, members of this committee, UN Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, are 84 member states.
Uh-huh.
Some other ones, they are not very interested in space. They are too poor to deal with.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yes.
And all these members send representatives to the sessions of the committee. So, the part of the committee, it's Romania, sending me as the representative of Romania, yes, to the committee.
Yes.
So sometimes I'm the head of delegation, sometimes I'm the deputy head of the delegation, and the president of the Romanian Space Agency, the actual president, it's the head of the delegation. And sometimes when the Association of Space Explorers, which is an NGO registered in Houston,
yes,
it's an observer member of this committee.
Uh-huh.
I mean, all NGOs, they are not states. They can't be full members. They are just observers.
Right, right.
They are involved in the work of the committee. They express their opinions, present reports on their activity, but can't vote, can't take part in the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And there are about 30 observer members now within this committee. By instance, the European Space Agency, it's one of the observer members.
Uh-huh.
There are some other international organizations, international telecommunication organizations, World Meteorological Organizations, all are members, observer members of this committee, and including this Association of All Astronauts and Cosmonauts in the World.
Yes. Now, what are the challenges that you face on this committee? What comes across your desk here that you have to vote on? I mean, are there any member nations or there aren't members who are being...
Just wait a minute. Well, I can't listen, you know. There were some interruptions.
Yes, there was a dog.
Tell me once again.
Well, I was wondering, are there any challenges that you... What are the challenges that you find on this committee? I mean, the committee has been formed for a specific reason. Ensure that there is peace. And outer space is, you know, because it's... Outer space is like the ocean. It's like the high seas. It doesn't belong to anybody.
That's right. There
may be people who want to own a part of it or want to claim a part. So, what are the challenges that you have with this group, with this committee?
I see. The committee was set up just to manage the global implications of the outer space in the interest of the member states.
Yes.
I mean, to issue some regulations, some international agreements.
Yes.
The most important one is the Outer Space Treaty, which was approved in 1967. It's a Bible of the outer space. I mean, here are stated all rules of the exploitation, exploration of the outer space.
Yes.
I mean, here is written that the outer space doesn't belong to anyone. It's like an international space.
Right.
No one could own the outer space. And here are some small problems now.
Yes.
Because there is a very strong American company, Planetary Resources,
yes,
that wants to mine on asteroids. The asteroids belong to the outer space. The asteroids are international bodies.
Yep.
And the mining on the international body caused a lot of legal problems.
Yes.
They were not approached until last year. And now the persons involved in the regulations of the outer space from legal point of view, they meet, talk, and analyze all these implications.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys from the Planetary Resources say, okay, let's compare the outer space with the international sea. May we fish in the international sea? Yes. Yeah. May we have the property of the fish there? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with the asteroids. We go and dig and mine and bring resources to the Earth.
Yes.
And the resources belong to us. And here there are discussions. Okay, they have to solve all these problems in the next years. But till then, I'm quite sure the technology will go on and the guys will do their work and will force the international community to agree on some things. Of course, you can't stop the development of technology.
And in 1967, we didn't have the technology.
That's right. We had the technology, but we never knew that some private people approached the outer space.
Exactly.
At that time, we thought that the space is represented just by the governments, by the big space agencies.
Right. Yes.
So the thing changed a lot, and we have to adapt the regulations to the new world.
Yes. I wish that, you know, when we had places like the high seas and like outer space, that we can at least find one part of the universe where we can be one world, where we can all act as one, even though we can't here on planet Earth. You wish that that could somehow become part of the agreements going forward now, you know?
Yes, Christina, we have to fight to accomplish this thing here on the Earth.
Yes.
Because this is our only home planet.
Yes.
So we may go to the moon, we may go to the Mars and live months, years there, but we don't belong to that places. We belong to the Earth.
Yes.
And now, with the help of space technologies, we really consider our Earth as a one world. Look at the telecommunications. They are worlds. The globalization of all economical things, businesses. It's one world. Education through space. You can learn what India does, what China does, what the US does, and being online all the time and see life, a lot of things.
Yes.
It's one world.
Yes.
And there are some other things. Even the way of thinking about the Earth. So a few decades before, we just knew about our city, about our country, and when we learned in the school about some other continents, everything was represented just theoretically.
Yes.
But now we can reach, touch, and see anything in the world, see the universe even.
Yes.
So we have to fight or to act to the turning people to understand our Earth as one world.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's a big, you know, that's a big responsibility you have, because you're kind of on a cutting edge way of agreement and partnership and alliances, I would think.
Yeah. That's right.
So good luck. I hope I can help.
Thank you. I'm quite sure, because you are an expert of the UN.
Yes.
That's right. ECOSOC committee.
Yes.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Now we need some help to promote a new NGO, a new foundation, as a member of ECOSOC.
Okay.
Yes, it's about the asteroids. The asteroids really represent
about the asteroids. Okay, yes, great. That's right. What I wanted to talk to you about, and tell me more about where you need this assistance, and let me be of help for you, because
Okay. So in 1992, I started to represent Romania at the UN COPUS.
Yes.
And in the same time, I was member of the Association of Space Explorers. And I have seen for the first time how the member states are represented, how they work together at the UN. And I've seen also how many international organizations are observer members and what they do. And I said, for sure, the Association of All Astronauts and Cosmonauts in the World should be an observer member of this committee. It should bring its own contribution to the development of different way of thinking about space, solving different problems, approaching different issues, and so on. And I went back to the association, explaining them what the UN represents, what this committee represents, and asking to agree to act on behalf of the association and promote it as an observer member. In the same year, we had a Congress of the Association in Washington, D.C. In that time, the committee was located in New York, and the general director of the UN Office for the Outer Space Affairs is the office which represents the secretariat of the committee. and in the office work international employers paid by the UN. Mm-hmm. And they make all the formalities for different organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And the general director took part in our congress, and next year, in February, we were already accepted as observer members of the committee, and we got the approval of ECOSOC. But now the procedures are completely different and much more complicated than in that time. We have to reapply to be agreed by ECOSOC,
yes,
proving that we act at the international level, that we have a global impact,
yes,
that we face all challenging the UN faces, and we agree with all the work of the UN, and so on. There are some conditions.
Yes.
Prove that we respect them and to become again agreed by the ECOSOC. We continue to be observer members of COPWAS, but
yes,
we have to reapply to become ECOSOC members.
Well, now tell me what this organization does, what you do.
The Association of Space Explorers.
Helping to protect the planet from asteroid impacts. That's what this is.
Yeah, on, this correct? Is one side of the activity of the association.
Okay.
In 2005, Rusty Schraker, the Apollo 9 astronaut, proposed to organize an Association of Space Explorers Committee on Near Earth Objects. I was the only member from Europe in that time, excepting Russia. They had also a representation there. There were some Americans, Canadians, and we started the work to make a very well-documented study on asteroids. We invited an international panel from many specialists from all over the world. They were not astronauts, but they were specialized in science, in planetary sciences, in economy,
yes,
global economy, in insurance in case of hazards at the international level.
Yeah.
And a lot of other people.
Yes.
So we organize 4 international workshops every year in a different country.
Ah, and that certainly fulfills one of the needs, doesn't it?
You found a study or?
No, an ECOSOC need, no. But you just said...
I know, it doesn't have any impact on ECOSOC now. I speak about what we did with respect to the asteroids.
Got it, okay.
And in the end, we issue a very well-documented study and submitted the study to the UN Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space.
Yeah.
The committee already approached the problem of the near-Earth objects, but was at a low level. Our study just improved the work of this committee, took it at a much higher level.
Yes.
And in the end, 3 years ago, we approved the organization of 2 international entities to deal with the asteroids. One is the International Warning Advisory Network. They study the asteroids, the orbit of the asteroids. They determine the hazard some asteroids pose to the Earth, mm-hmm, and inform international organizations and governments on that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is the Space Mission Planning Advisory Group. Most of the big space agencies in the world and some specialists from not so big countries, but developing countries dealing with space and with science mainly,
mm-hmm,
they are part, and they try to determine what technology to apply to save the Earth, I mean, to deflect the orbit of dangerous asteroid.
Yes.
Okay, all these discussions are in the beginning now. The technology is developing. There are some study missions to the asteroids.
Yes.
But the international organizations under the auspices of the UN is just started to work. Besides that, all these agencies will put money in different space projects. Public money, our money. We pay fees, we pay anything. And our money will go somewhere. The population should be informed about the work of these organizations,
yes,
about the danger some asteroids pose to the Earth and to us. And in this way...
What are the dangers? Can you illuminate those? Can you share with us what those dangers might be? Because, you know, it's so far kind of out there to that we can't really envision. I mean, we see shooting stars. We see stars falling.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes there are small meteorites or asteroids falling in the atmosphere.
Right.
But they disappear in the atmosphere. Yes. They are too small to hit the Earth.
Exactly.
But if they are bigger, they could hit different regions of the world. By instance, 65 million years ago, a big asteroid with a diameter of about 10 kilometers fell down in the Yucatan Peninsula, which is now Mexico.
Yes.
And the effect of the impact was so high that made the dinosaurs disappear, changed the climate at the global level. Yes, it was 10 kilometers in diameter, but entering the atmosphere with a speed of about 20 to 30 kilometers per second. The spaceship around the Earth, the International Space Station, flies with a speed of 8 kilometers per second and does a full tour of the Earth in 1.5 hours. These asteroids come with a speed of 20 to 30 kilometers per second, not per hours, per second. Mm-hmm. So the effect of their passing the atmosphere, it's pretty high, intensive.
Yes.
The shock wave puts down anything on the ground on the huge area. I can tell you another thing. In 1908, an asteroid fell down in Siberia, in Tunguska region. Mm-hmm. 30th of June was that thing. The diameter of the asteroid was 45 meters. Only 45 meters, not 100, not 1 kilometer. Mm-hmm. And it just was disintegrated in the atmosphere at an altitude of about 8 to 12 kilometers.
Oh.
But the shock wave on the air was so high that put down about 2,000 square kilometers of forest with anything inside, houses, animals, anything.
Yeah.
And the light effects, the ionization of the atmosphere, was seen in the northern countries and even in England.
Mm. Mm.
Wow. Well, another more recent event. In 2013, in February, 15 February, near Chelyabinsk in Russia, fall down a small, very small asteroid, 17 meters in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also disintegrated into the atmosphere. The light effect was so high that the population thought that a nuclear bomb exploded. All of them, it was about 9 o'clock in the morning. All of them went to the windows to watch what happened outside.
Yes.
And after that, after several minutes, the shock wave came, broke all the windows of the city, broke some tops of the buildings, just the big pressure of the air.
Wow.
Because of the high speed of a 17 meters diameter asteroid. And hurt about 1,300 people. They were hospitalized.
Wow.
And it didn't fall exactly in the city. It fell at a distance of about 80 kilometers from the city.
Why?
Look, what means an asteroid coming down to the Earth? And we take into account the asteroids from about 45 meters to several kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
If an asteroid with a diameter of 1 kilometer falls down in Europe, by instance, it could destroy many countries, puts down the social life, economy, communications, anything. This is the effect of an asteroid falling down the Earth. It depends on the diameter.
That's very important.
That's right, and that's the reason we analyze and organize all these institutions at the level of the UN.
Yes. Do you have reporting of that event on February 15th? Are there images of it, photographs of what occurred there?
They were recorded and reported to the UN by Russia because it was on the Russian territory.
Oh.
But it brought a lot of information to all people around the world and to scientists. how the things develop and what could happen if the population is not prepared to face such challenges, to face some hazards.
Yes.
What we did, the Association of Space Explorers with some smart guys, they organized an event, a yearly event, the Asteroids Day. So the organizers of the event were in the beginning the Apollo 9 astronaut, Rusty Schweikart.
Yes.
The Brian May, the guitarist of Queen, if you remember him. Yes. Brian May. Brian May, but you remember Queen, the band?
Oh, yes, yes.
The band, Queen, yeah.
Oh, the band, okay.
Brian May was the guitarist. It's one of the well-known, it's considered seventh in the world, most important guitarist of the world. But in the same time, he has a PhD in astrophysics.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's right. And he's very fond of asteroids, studying the asteroids.
Oh.
He was...
celebrity there.
One part of the Asteroid Day.
Yes.
The third one was a filmmaker, Grigory Richter. It's a young guy, very promising guy, who does a film on asteroids. And then they thought, why to not inform the people not only by films, by movies, but by an international event on the asteroids.
Yes.
And the fourth person is the CEO of a foundation located in San Francisco. B612 was the name of the asteroid on which the little prince from the fairy tale on the Earth. B612, and they put the name of the foundation B612.
Uh-huh.
And also some astronauts are acting there. Rusty Schweikart is a member, but Danica Remy is the CEO. And four of them, they promoted the Asteroid Day at the international level. Okay. So it has a huge impact. Media all over the world, they inform about the asteroid problem and the Asteroid Day. And we consider that this asteroid event could be the part which was missing from the UN to promote the idea and the studies on the asteroids to all the people. So they were the organization spending money, and this is the organization informing the people why they spend money and how they spend money.
Yes.
Okay, they approached me because I was very familiar with the UN problems as a member of the Association of Space Explorers. And in February last year, I proposed to the UN in the report of COPUS to adopt a resolution of the General Assembly to recognize the Asteroid Day as an international event very necessary to be promoted by all countries.
What date is that?
To inform, to educate the people. What they said, I reiterate. This committee has two subcommittees and one committee.
Okay.
The near top problem is discussed within the scientific and technical subcommittee of the UN Committee on the Peaceful Use of Outer Space. Okay. There is another legal committee, subcommittee, and the full committee.
What date?
I made a proposal in February at the Scientific and Technical Subcommittee. I reiterated the proposal at the full committee in June. And in October, the General Assembly adopted the resolution and recognized the Asteroid Day event.
Okay.
Last year, we organized the event not having yet the resolution. It was in June, 30th of June.
Okay.
But this year, we succeeded to organize an asteroid foundation registered in Luxembourg.
Yes.
An asteroid institute located in San Francisco to promote science and even to organize master studies and doctoral studies on asteroids and science connected with the asteroids. Mm-hmm. And the Asteroid Foundation in Luxembourg promoting the asteroid event and transforming the event in a process at the international level. I'm one of the founders of the foundation.
Okay.
Why in Luxembourg? Because last year, the Luxembourg adopted a law that offers very good conditions for location, for financial point of view, to all institutions, private or governmental, that deal with asteroids. They look forward and they've seen a very big impact and a high development of these institutions and of the problem.
Yeah.
So it's what I did last year.
Okay, so what date is it the World Day of
Asteroid
the Asteroid
Day?
Or Global, or what's it called?
The International Asteroid Day is 30th of June, the day when the asteroid fell down in Siberia in 1908.
Okay.
Actually, 1908 was the first documented fall of the asteroids with witnesses that witnessed, and there are some written witnesses from them.
Uh-huh. Okay, so June 30th. Well, we've missed it this year. We'll get it next year.
Yeah, keep in touch with me. I'll organize together something.
Yes, absolutely. Let me think where we were, because there was so much I wanted to ask you. Now, what is this trash in outer space? What was that? What was that discussion about? Because that's what Marilyn brought up, and we, as I mentioned to you, we do have coming up the World Clean Up the World Day coming up in September, a weekend actually, on the 16th and 17th of September.
Yes.
And so we were, I wanted to find out about that from you.
Okay, as a historical fact, the man started to send satellites to the space in 1957. Was the first Sputnik sent into space on 4th of October.
Yes.
Then the people went up there. Gagarin was the first one in April 61. And then a lot of other satellites were launched with different purposes.
Yes.
Many years after, we just learned that the outer space environment, it's not so unlimited. And putting a lot of satellites on Earth orbit caused a lot of garbage, because some of them, they don't function anymore. And they are uncontrolled.
Yes.
And there are so many that on different orbits, they could hit other active satellites.
Uh-huh.
And it already happened several times. Analyzing the problem, we just acknowledged that this is a very big problem for humanity and for the spacefaring nations.
Yeah.
Because the space has more and more garbage, space debris, we say space debris.
Yes.
Study the problem from scientific point of view, determine the density of this garbage into space, where is most, where is less, determine the probability of this debris of hitting the active satellites.
Mm-hmm.
On the sky now, there are about, let's say, 1,000 active satellites and maybe 7,000-8,000 different other satellites not functioning that represents a pose hazard to the active satellites.
Uh-huh.
First, the problem was analyzed by the space agencies. Then we organized a specialized committee at the level of the UN Committee on the Peaceful Usage of Outer Space.
Yes.
In the end, eventually we issue some regulations, recommendations to be respected by the big space agency.
Yes.
Do not cause the formation of new debris.
Right.
By instance, to have all satellites and all stages of the rockets, that usually the last stage stay in the space and turns around the Earth, to have reverse engines to bring them back to the atmosphere and to disintegrate them into the atmosphere.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the challenges we pose in front of the space agencies and in front of any entity that launches satellites. Of course, not all of them, they applied all these recommendations, because they are recommendations. They are not included in an international agreement.
Uh-huh.
But in time, all these recommendations will become regulations.
Yes.
All countries could apply them and agreed to sign this agreement.
Yes.
But most of the space agencies, they already apply these regulations. On the other hand, we have to find ways to bring down some big pieces of this space debris. They are full stages of rockets turning around the Earth. They are engines. Some of them, they exploded into space after they finished functioning.
Right.
And caused a lot of other debris. And now we study how we could bring back some of this most dangerous debris. But you know, debris is not dangerous just because it's big. They turn very fast around the Earth. And some of them, even being small ones, having a few centimeters, if they hit a space station, they cause a hole and cause the desermitization of the space station.
Yes.
And pose danger to the crew. And about 7,000 of small and bigger space debris, they are followed by different radars on the ground. So Russia, Japan, the United States, they have big radars that follow all these pieces. They counted all the orbits of these pieces. And aware the space station when such a piece gets closer. And every month, every 2 months, the space stations makes different maneuvers into space just to avoid the collision with such debris.
Whoa.
Yes. So this is the problem with space debris. So we have to clean the space. We have to not make any more garbage into space,
right,
and to keep it clean for the future space activities.
Well, do you have, like, you know, like someone comes by and picks up our trash? Do you have? Is there an effort? Is there like a space vehicle that can go around and pick up this debris?
Oh, you know, it's very difficult. Every launch costs a lot of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And just to take down a piece of an engine and spending, let's say, 100 million sending a space shuttle to fly and to catch this space debris and to bring it down, it's a lot of money. A lot of waste of money. Now we think about some other possibilities. By instance, to send small satellites that approach Tyson space debris and using its own engine of the small satellite just to modify the orbit of the space debris and bring it down to the Earth, into the atmosphere.
Uh-huh.
Or if they are small, just to destroy them completely with a big laser from the ground.
Uh-huh.
That is another possibility. But bottom line, we have to find a cheap way.
Yes.
To change the orbit of the big pieces of space debris and bring them down.
Well,
there are different studies. There are different ideas. Some institutions work on them, make tests.
Yes. Who takes responsibility for their waste? I mean, you know, if you put it up there, you need to, you know, make sure that it's taken care of. But that's the agreements, isn't it?
They are just recommendations.
Just recommendations.
Just recommendations. Because at the beginning, we didn't think about who is responsible for space debris. We didn't think about space debris.
No.
Each country is responsible for its own hardware sent to the outer space.
Well, very good. Okay.
But sometimes, look, a satellite is built in Switzerland, by instance.
Yes.
It's bought by Russia.
Yes.
It's sent, or let's say, it's bought by an Asian country, a different one. And they have a contract with Russia to send that satellite into space. Who is responsible for the satellite?
Exactly.
The producer, the buyer, or the sender into space? And there is already an international regulation about the responsibility of the launch of this any type of equipment into the outer space.
Uh-huh.
And it's already determined who is responsible, taking into account who produces it, what were the rules applied in producing, the standards applied.
Yes.
Who is the buyer and who is the sender? Okay.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, that's a, you have taken on some monumental tasks here, I can see. I mean, truly, this is, it's a little, it's a little overwhelming, but it's not, but it, it sounds it when you talk, you know, because, well, because you're in a vast new arena, you know, you're in a whole new world.
That's right. That's right. And I'm from a long time and I know a lot of things about,
yes.
Okay, I know about the evolution of different subject items at international level. I know and I work within many international institutions. And now I could put together a lot of information, bring together people from different institutions and do things. Just act like with this asteroid day.
Yes.
I was in the right place in the right time and the right people found me and I promoted it.
Right. Well, you know, I know we've been talking for quite a while and so we've pretty much run out of our time. I'm grateful to talk to you, but I do want to help you with this, with the foundation that you want to get gaining ECOSOC membership. If that's
first we need information about the new regulation of ECOSOC about accepting NGOs as members working with the UN institutions.
Okay, so
ECOSOC has these regulations.
Yes.
And sometimes if you don't know somebody, a specific person there, it's very difficult to find exactly in a short time anything you have to do.
Oh, okay.
If you just send a letter, it takes months and months.
I know.
You're approached by somebody there and they have hundreds and hundreds of letters, such letters, and it takes maybe 1 year to answer you and so on. And if you find somebody, a specific person to be involved in these things, mm-hmm. we can find much faster what is necessary to act faster, to send them documents, to have discussions, to have an interview there, because they organize usually interviews with the representatives of these NGOs.
Yes.
And to adopt a resolution that we are able to work with UN. And now I'm involved not only with the Association of Space Explorers as an observer member, but we want to promote the Asteroid Foundation.
Yes.
Also as an observer member of the UN, of the UN Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space.
Okay.
And we have to pass all this process with ECOSOC again, but with this Asteroid Foundation.
Okay. With and the foundation, the Asteroid Foundation, did you say that was, is that registered in San Francisco or is it?
No, the Asteroid Foundation is registered in Luxembourg.
Luxembourg.
The same people registered in San Francisco, the Asteroid Institute. It's a different institution promoting just learning science.
Yes. Okay, let me see what I can do to find out about those new regulations for ECOSOC.
Okay.
Okay.
If you just search on Google Asteroid Day, you will find the